Welcome to the Damage Report. I am not John Iadarola. Who's the host of this show? I'm Francesca Fiorentini. John Iadarola is on vacation, a much needed break. You get me. Dad is gone. It is just Francesca Fiorentini. And guess what? My co-host, Anna Kasparian.
What's up, Francesca? How are you?
I'm good. It's been a long weekend. I've never hosted John's show before, and I'm going to make it look incredibly hard, I think, because he makes so easy.
You host your own show. You're not giving yourself enough credit. You're going to be
It's not a news show. Here I have to like pretend like I know stuff, and you know, there's graphics. Anna, there's graphics. I'm very scared.
I'm familiar with the graphics, but you do a news podcast, believe it or not. You're going to do great, and I'm looking forward to it.
Did you get some time to relax? Did you cram yourself into a beach or some kind of body of water? It was 110 degrees in L.A.
Let me just say, I actually gave myself the 3 days in a row off. Didn't do the Jacobin show that I host every Saturday. Just like gave myself a proper 3 days off because I really needed it. It only took the production meeting this morning to reverse any progress that was done on my mental sanity. And I want to basically rip people's throats out. So I'm in that kind of mood. So just
good.
Letting you guys know. Yeah.
Just coming in hot on a Tuesday. That's okay. Anna, I'm so glad you're here because we're going to need you. We are talking about things that will make you want to rip some people's throats out. Candace Owens coming for Cardi B. A gender reveal party that revealed people are idiots. And we'll get into what happened a little bit later. The coronavirus once again spiking. We're in for a very long winter. We have to brace ourselves. We need this time off. So we miss John. So happy to have Anna. And let's just get into it.
Let's do it.
All right. Michael Cohen, former Trump lawyer and fixer who pled guilty to financial crimes and campaign violations in 2018 and is serving 3 years in federal prison, has just released his book. That's right. This Grifter's Gotta Get Paid Too, but we'll discuss what kind of grifter he is. Michael Cohen's book, Disloyal, a memoir, is being published today. Lots of advanced copies and advanced access to this book from NPR and AP and all other. I don't know about TYT. I'm not sure if we got special access to it. Lots of bombshells. Again, this is the only person actually serving time for the crimes that they committed for Donald Trump. Some of those bombshells include Donald Trump talking about how Black and Latino voters were, quote, too stupid to vote for him, and that any country run by Black leaders was an S-hole country. We've heard that before. On another occasion, the death of the South African president, Nelson Mandela, Cohen says that Trump told him that apartheid-era South Africa had been, quote, beautiful, and that Nelson Mandela had effed the whole country up. Wow. Another one, something that I think we sort of knew, but now it's a great reminder. Trump once set up a fake Obama and staged this entire apprentice act out with an actor who looked like Obama. So in a photograph that is included in this memoir, Trump is seated at a desk across from a man who looks vaguely like the 44th American president. In the middle of Trump's desk are two books, in which one has Barack Obama emblazoned on the front cover, in case you didn't understand who he was supposed to be talking to and about. And this was all part of a 2012 RNC video that didn't actually air, because back then, if you can believe it, there was mildly more taste in the Republican Party. But this was just a sort of dream, like a fantasy that you fulfill. And Trump's was firing Barack Obama. And then maybe he did it in real life. One other thing I wanted to just point out of this, which I found particularly disgusting. Cohen reports how Trump leered at his 15-year-old daughter. The three were at a Trump, New Jersey golf club 8 years ago when Cohen caught the president staring at his daughter. quote, "When did she get so hot?" Trump asked when he learned the girl he'd been staring at was Cohen's daughter. Not before, after, when he found out it was Michael Cohen's 15-year-old daughter. Anna, what do you make of Michael Cohen, the only guy serving time in prison, now out with his memoir?
Well, okay, so I want to comment on the specific things that we've learned through his book so far. I'll do that in a second. But first, let me just say, none of this matters. None of it. 0% of it. It's not going to change Trump's supporters and their opinion of him. It's not going to hurt him in any way. This is now the 28th book of, you know, that has like a Trump friend, insider, whatever, uncovering all of these shocking details about Trump's life. Again, no one cares. This is just, you know, the gossipy stuff that liberals love to talk about, right? And I know we're talking about it, but I'm getting kind of exhausted with the, ooh, maybe this will change things. It's not going to change anything. Let's just accept that.
Totally.
I love how on one hand, Trump is calling Black Americans too stupid to vote for him because he's trying to make an argument that he'd be better for Black people in America. And then at the same time, goes after Nelson Mandela for ruining the country, his country, for ending apartheid. Oh yeah, yeah, I'm sure it's Black Americans who are the dumb ones for not wanting to vote for him. And then I don't mean to kink shame, but like the Obama thing. I'm starting to think he gets some sort of sexual gratification thinking about Obama and like punishing Obama. And it's kind of creepy.
Oh yeah, I mean, he also has been bringing up the dossier, as he says, that the Atlantic article about him insulting soldiers is basically like the dossier. It's like, dude, no one was talking about the dossier, but now that you are, we're suddenly reminded of the most salacious part of that dossier and like the fact that this was a presidential suite that Obama was staying at, and that was kind of your thing, bro. Like,
yeah,
that was a little bit your thing. I totally agree with you, though, that this, after so many books that have come out about what's gone on in the White House, like, I absolutely believe it, but I'm balanced between this, like, how much should we be numb to it and how much should we remember that this really matters? And I mean, it really matters in that it is disgusting and ridiculous, the things that he's said and done, and that he is absolutely a sham, right? His entire campaign, his entire persona. I think with Cohen, and I want to read a little bit more about this, Cohen strikes at me at a different chord because Cohen loved Trump. Cohen was like groomed by Trump. He was his lawyer from 2006 to 2018. And he grew up apparently reading The Art of the Deal and had wanted nothing more than to work for Donald Trump his entire life. Cohen says, In the book, this is from NPR, Cohen alternates between taking accountability for his own behavior and trying to describe what he found so magnetic in Trump, that language sometimes skims close to erotic terms. This is Anastasia at NPR writes. It was physical, Cohen writes, emotional, not quite spiritual, but a deep longing and a need that Trump filled for me.
Oh, God, this is very uncomfortable. It's just people that I dislike, and the wording that's used here. It doesn't matter if Michael Cohen was literally Donald Trump's biological son. It doesn't matter. I mean, you have Trump's own niece publishing her book, releasing recordings of Trump saying disgusting things. Doesn't matter. None of it matters. And yeah. Like, it's not even about being desensitized at this point. It's about realizing, and I don't know if there's anything that can be done in response to this, but just realizing that we're living in a post-truth, post-logic world where the people closest to Trump can become whistleblowers and show that Donald Trump has like some cage full of children he's trafficking, and they wouldn't even care. And that, right. That's where we're at. And so the real question is, what do we do about that? And is there anything that can be done?
Absolutely.
Because I mean, QAnon has like snowballed into, it's basically representative of the Republican Party now, the Republican electorate. It's not some small group of unhinged conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
This has now become illustrative of what the right wing is in America. And I don't know how to handle it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's interesting about these revelations that they keep happening, I mean, first of all, I do think Cohen is different. And I'm going to say, like, I know the guy, like, sure, he wants to sell books, and sure, he is, you know, as the Trump line is, oh, this is a convicted felon. He's a, you know, he's a criminal. He's a con man. Yeah, he did all these cons for you, buddy. Like, that's why he's in jail, is because he paid out campaign money to your lover to shut her up. Like, that's what happened. So all his crimes are related to you. So what are we really talking about here? But I do think, like, I got to say, as I think Michael Cohen is probably a terrible person, and he is a terrible person, but, like, a little bit of a hats off for the one person who's not looking for a pardon, like, the one person who, like, looked at his family and, like, whether or not you believe him, was like, yeah, maybe this is more important. Maybe I'll do the time, 3 years, whatever. Like, I feel like that is, I have a slightly more respect than, let's say, John Bolton, for example. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like what you're saying with this outrage, I feel like liberals, moderates, the Democrats, sort of, you know, establishment Dems are looking to the left to be like, when are you going to get excited? And the left is like, we've known this. When are you going to get excited? Like, when are you going to do anything about it? So we're kind of all looking at each other. Well, like, when are you doing something? They're all, you know, it's like establishment Dems are like, well, when are you taking the streets over Michael Cohen's book? And it's like, we're not going to do that, you know, necessarily, yeah. Right? We're not going to go out there because of this Michael Cohen book. Because we knew what was going on, and you guys dropped the ball in 2016. So there's, like, this little bit of a,
no, you know. I mean, it's corporate Democrats dropped the ball countless times since 2016. Okay, Nancy Pelosi was in the process of impeaching Donald Trump, and in the middle of this impeachment, she decided to call a press conference to brag about how she negotiated with Trump and they reached a deal on this, like, rebranded version of NAFTA, right?
Right.
What are you doing? What are you doing? That is not how you fight. Like, I'm just, okay. As someone who identifies as part of the left, I'm definitely to the left of corporate Democrats. If they're pointing fingers at us regarding empowering Donald Trump, that is the most laughable thing I've ever heard. They're the ones who latch onto things that people don't care about, make a big deal about it, while Donald Trump is actually getting away with murder, robbing the American people. They never focus on his financial crimes. They stay away from his financial crimes. Mm. And then they make a big to-do about these books that come out. No one cares. No one cares. And they shoot themselves in the foot over and over again by aiding and abetting Donald Trump in various policies. Nancy mm-hmm. Pelosi is incredibly guilty of that. She won't call a press conference to address the fact that the Senate GOP has blocked the next round of stimulus. She won't make a big to-do about that, but she'll definitely call a press conference to give Trump kudos for this rebranded NAFTA deal. Please get out of here. Like, I'm so sick of yeah. them. I don't identify with them. I'm embarrassed. Oh, I know. She's very strong with her ripping of a speech. And yeah, she's pathetic and embarrassing. Honestly,
that's so true that like her trying to give him a little bit of a win, like he doesn't get what you're trying to do. He doesn't get that, like, whatever you're trying to pull, or he doesn't want to be normalized. And I think it's so funny, right? After the RNC making such a big deal about cancel culture. Oh, we're in cancel culture. This book is just one more proof, like, of all the proof. How many, like, alleged rapes, let's just call them rapes, do you need? Mm-hmm. Before you realize this guy is uncancelable. You talk about cancel culture, you can't cancel Donald Trump. He's uncancelable. Like, this is the first guy who should have been canceled. And nope, it doesn't matter. Whatever will come out, as you absolutely said, you know, he could be, I don't know, like I always say, show me the undies, hashtag show me the undies. If he was wearing diapers, Diaper Dawn, that mm-hmm. would only, people would run out and buy Depends. And then the people 100%. Who really need it, Depends, wouldn't be able to find it. And then we'd be in a horrible conundrum.
Cohen knows readers will question the validity of many of his claims, but he wants us to believe this.
So Donald Trump will do anything and everything within which to win. And I believe that includes manipulating the ballots. I believe that he would even go so far as to start a war in order to prevent himself from being removed from office.
We've got more to look forward to in 2020. Anna, what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are there are a number of red flags, especially when it comes to right-wing extremism in this country and how it's being amplified as we approach the election. We need to be prepared. We need to be concerned about this. And my top concern is that we don't have an opposition party with a robust solution to keep people safe and to secure our democratic process. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen on Election Day. I don't know what's going to happen in the week following Election Day. All I know is I see the warning signs of what Trump is likely to do and what right-wing radicals are likely to do. And I'm just not seeing any preparation by Democrats.
Yeah, definitely not. Definitely not from leadership. Whereas I think a lot of grassroots organizations are straight up playing out scenarios. What if he doesn't? What if he wins? What if he wins? What if he doesn't win, but he, you know, says it was stolen? What if he doesn't leave? You know, there's so many different scenarios that, like, we kind of got to do this. We have to create like an earthquake kit, you know, a go bag, all kinds of, you know, contingency plans. And you're absolutely right. Sadly, it's not coming from the top down. It's coming from the grassroots up. And speaking of opposition party, I just want to mention it is September 8th. And the Virgo who occupies the biggest space in my heart, other than Beyonce, is Bernie Sanders. Senator Bernie Sanders has a birthday today. It is his birthday. Happy birthday, Bernie Sanders. I wanted to also plug that TYT is going to have a Bernie bash today at 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern on tyt.com/live. Jank, Emma, and Ben Dixon are going to be there. It's going to be so good. A year ago, I interviewed Bernie in a diner in New York, and it was like a few days before his birthday. It was like right this week. And I didn't tell him happy birthday, and it stuck with me, Anna. I'm just should have said happy birthday. I wish it's you were okay. The opposition leader that we had now.
Well, to be fair, if there's anyone who would probably actively avoid saying happy birthday to people, it's Bernie Sanders. Like, yeah. It's not really his thing. And that's what I love about him the most. There's no platitudes. Yeah, no platitudes, no nonsense, like no phone call every year to give you like that. Like, oh yeah, I really do care about your birthday. I swear. I'm not just like, you know, doing that. Like, I like that about him. So
yeah, totally. That was the best part of that New York Times. Yeah, I know. I wouldn't. That's the best part of that New York Times interview. It's like, oh, happy birthday. I'm not like that. And they were like, oh,
I know.
So
I know.
My pearls.
Yeah. We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Is continuing to play damage control. From The Atlantic reporting that he called fallen soldiers losers and suckers, didn't understand World War I, and didn't understand why he had to honor fallen soldiers. Trump, we don't have this clip, but Trump did say that the United States military leadership is beholden to arms manufacturers in an attack on his own administration only days after reports that he had mocked fallen soldiers. Trump said leaders of the Pentagon probably weren't, quote, in love with me because, quote, they wanted to do nothing but fight wars so that all of those wonderful companies that make bombs and make the planes and make everything else stay happy. Huh. Interesting little analysis about endless wars from the president. Wow, you might think he was like an isolationist or something, or like didn't like foreign wars. Let's check in on some of his record. For the record, there have been more drone strikes under Donald Trump than Barack Obama. This is in the first 2 years of his presidency. There were 2,243 drone strikes in the first 2 years of Trump's presidency, compared with 1,878 in Obama's 8 years in office. And this is according to the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, a UK-based think tank. Also, last year, $8 billion to Saudi Arabia, speaking of weapons manufacturers. This was, again, an emergency funding bill that he rammed through over the heads of Congress and said, yeah, we're doing smart bombs and new weapons to Saudi Arabia. Weeks after Jamal Khashoggi, the journalist, was killed after or disappeared after leaving or never leaving a Saudi embassy. And also, again, in the middle of the Yemen, the war on Yemen and the Saudi-led war on Yemen, which, again, the House voted to retract from and get out of. I just want to read a couple things from this article from last year. Once again, just a reminder of where Trump stands on war. We're still in Afghanistan. How many? We're 20, going on 20 years. This September in Afghanistan's Helmand province, this is last year, a wedding party was turned into a massacre after a commando raid by Afghan forces operating with U.S. support. Over 40 people were killed. Just days earlier, a drone strike in the Nangarhar province blew up a gathering of pine nut farmers resting after a day's harvest. Also, it's not just in Afghanistan. Independent investigators have shown huge civilian death tolls, once again, from the ramped-up air wars in Iraq and Syria. The numbers are far greater than publicly stated figures released by the Pentagon. And under Trump, the number of incidents in which U.S. military has denied or hidden civilian deaths seems to have increased. One last thing. Amnesty International investigation is looking into an incident in Somalia in March when three innocent men in Mogadishu were killed after being targeted by a U.S. drone strike. This is last year. So this guy says the Pentagon leaders just want to look out for Raytheon and Boeing and weapons manufacturers, GE, and yet he seems to also like them as well. Anna, what are your thoughts on this strategy to throw the Pentagon under the bus, even though he's at the helm of the Pentagon?
I think the strategy is going to work with his base. There's no question about that. It's the same type of fake populism that appealed to them, and they still think, even in this point in his first term, that Donald Trump is looking out for the best economic interests and, you know, foreign policy interests of the American people. Obviously, based on all the details that you just explained, that couldn't be further from the truth. Remember, Donald Trump was the one who made the decision to drop the Moab, or the mother of all bombs, in Afghanistan. Yes. So the list goes on and on and on. And when it comes to sway or influence by private industry or weapons manufacturers, let me just remind you all that after we had, I don't know, several mass shootings in the country, Donald Trump decided that he would announce some level of gun control. Now, of course, everything he says is usually empty and hollow. He didn't give any specifics, but he seemed to be much more receptive to gun control. And then the NRA hit him up and they were like, hey, listen, you don't remember that you're our whore? You don't remember that we paid you $3 million? That's how much we donated to you. How about you shut up about gun control, because we control you. So for Donald Trump to claim that he's like some tough leader who's not swayed by corruption is laughable, to say the least. But look, this is information and evidence that I think logical, rational people will be receptive to.
Yeah.
His base, I can't say the same for them. They're going to believe whatever he says, even as he negatively impacts their pocketbooks, even as they're watching their own family members drop dead from COVID because of Donald Trump's lack of leadership.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. It's always been interesting to me to see the ways that Trump likes to co-opt lines that have been uttered by Bernie Sanders and from, you know, progressives and people on the left who do want to see a wind down of Afghanistan, of the war in Afghanistan, and who are very, very critical of Obama's record because of the drone strikes. And yet we sort of give Trump this like blind pass. And because we're not looking at the details, you know, like he mm-hmm. rescinded a 2016 executive order by Obama, which was an outgoing executive order, right? It was an outgoing policy to count the number of civilian deaths from drone strikes. It was like a little too late, buddy. But still, Trump was like, no, we don't need that. I don't want that, you know?
Yeah.
And so once again, all of these reports have to be by these civilian review boards and international agencies and we're still super in the dark. But so I find what's so annoying to me is like the Bannon idea, the Bannons of the world were like, well, he just hates the globalists, you know, and he just wants, he's an isolationist, you know, and we just have America first. BS, man. He is more in bed with the Saudis than any president. I mean, and again, this at a time, this was not a light vote for the House and the Senate to agree. We need to not sell Saudi Arabia these weapons. We need to pull back from our support. When does that happen? It never happens.
Never happens. I mean, same with the bipartisan legislation regarding pulling out of our involvement in Yemen. Donald Trump vetoed that as well. I mean, Donald Trump, in all of his actions, has not only signed on to the foreign policies of previous administrations, he's expanded on it. And he pressured Congress, and it's shameful that Congress signed on to this, but he pressured Congress to increase the military budget in the latest, National Defense Authorization Act.
Right.
Why do you think he did that? Do you think he did that to give our soldiers better health care or to give our soldiers a significant pay increase? Of course not. That money goes to the weapons manufacturers. And after he secured that increase in the military budget, you want to know what the Trump administration proposed? Cutting $2 billion in health care for our troops and veterans. So you know that money is going to go to the private contractors, the weapons manufacturers, and the same corporations that he's accusing others of being influenced by. No, he's being influenced by it. He loves it. And he doesn't care at all about the American people. He doesn't even care about his own base. But, you know, again, this is all information that's easily verifiable. The question is, are people seeking it out? Are people receptive to it? And it's becoming increasingly frustrating to feel as though we live in like this post-truth world where the evidence doesn't matter. People just go based on what they feel despite being confronted with evidence.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's, I mean, it definitely, we are just living in a 1984 social experiment. I am really hoping that 2020 ends up with just a like, you know, Ashton Kutcher comes out and it's like, you got punked. We're like, yay, oh, silly Donald Trump. Like, you know, just anything, because we are living in the upside down. I just want to quickly say that apparently this is from a New York Times report, that Mr. Trump's financial supremacy has evaporated and, even Joe Biden's campaign set a monthly record in August with a monster haul of $365 million in donations. The Trump campaign has not released its August figures yet. And by the start of July, his campaign and the DNC had all but erased the Trump RNC's cash on hand advantage. Of the $1.1 billion his campaign and the party raised from the beginning of 2019 through July, more than $800 million has already been spent. Now some people inside the campaign are forecasting that was once unthinkable, a cash crunch was left with less than 60 days until the election is going to be a reality. So just so you know, there's a reason he's tweeting 50 times a day. There's a reason he's trying to distract people. They're bleeding money. Brad Parscale and his private jets, just like, you know, it's expensive. It's expensive. The sprinters that they're getting and the bottles of Moet to get from here to there, or whatever they're spending it on, it's expensive. It's very, that whatever kind of hairspray from the 80s that you can only buy on eBay from, like, you know, some small town in South Korea that manufactures, I don't know where he gets his hairspray. Like, that must just be really pricey.
Do they still make Aquanet? Was it Aquanet?
I was just gonna say, it's totally Aquanet. It is.
But man, that stuff smelled like fertilizer.
I know. And speaking of high, I could have used some Aquanet. It really did. Just the logo of it was like, looked like a toxicity logo, like a label.
Oh, 100%, 100%. You could always get like your, you know, bulk purchase of Aquanet at the 99 cent store. I would know because it was a staple in our household when I was growing up. Man,
did you do the
back memories.
You remember the bangs, the like rolled bangs and then Aquanet? That was,
no,
I
didn't.
That.
I didn't do that, but I did have a phase of crunchy hair. I don't know if you were ever into that, but when I was in high school, I did the crunchy hair where
I didn't have crunchy hairs. Did you have, cause you have waves.
Neither do I. No. I would do like this crazy process of like, take a shower, get your hair wet and then dry it. So it's damp. And then I would like spray Aquanet, both bottles, and then flip my hair and put it in like the messiest, crunchiest bun, take a blow dryer, let it blow dry, like on this like crunchy bun at the top of my head. And then I don't know what I was thinking.
Did you then like paint on like a little squiggle right here? Just like right here.
I never did that. But
so you're saying this is like the most in common you might have. I'm sorry, but with the president, it's just like you understand what it is to be locked into a hairstyle. You can't escape. Yeah. And like, how did you get out of that? Was someone like, girl, like, you're so beautiful, but the hairstyle.
I think I just,
you just looked at a magazine.
It was a phase. It was a phase. And you know, it took a lot of time, a lot of resources. So I finally gave it up. And, yeah, I'm glad I did. It's horrible for your hair, by the way.
Yo, and the brain cells. But somehow it only made you stronger, Anna. Summer is officially over with Labor Day passing, and that means that the cold weather will be setting in sometime. I'm not sure when, because it has been insanely hot in California and probably around the country as well. But apparently the cold weather is setting in, and that means more people will be indoors and there is more chance of coronavirus to spread. And in recent days, we now know from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington, which has been a go-to for the CDC, for a lot of health experts, and for the White House, but this one is actually a verifiable source. U.S. deaths from coronavirus will reach 410,000 by the end of the year, more than double the current death toll, and deaths could soar to 3,000 per day in December. This is from the director of the IHME, this institute. He says, quote, the worst is yet to come. I don't think perhaps that's a surprise, although I think there's a natural tendency. We're a little bit in the Northern Hemisphere summer to think that maybe the epidemic is going away. Relatedly, the Institute says Americans' refusal to wear masks still remains a problem. It's an extraordinary opportunity to save lives, but apparently, the use of masks declined from a peak in August, and declines are notable throughout the Midwest, including some states such as Illinois and Iowa, with increasing case numbers.
Yeah.
Bad. I mean, this is the thing, like, I feel like we're in this moment of we have to keep repeating, just because you're over the virus doesn't mean it's over. Just because you're over the pandemic doesn't mean it's over. And it's hard. I mean, initially it was like, well, I want to do whatever the opposite of this awful, you know, lying president does and says, because he's totally bungled and has blood on his hands because of this. And then you reach a point where you're like, it is 110 degrees and we're at a beach and people are without masks. And you know what? I'm not going to wear one. You know, there's one can understand, you know, we did so much early on in this pandemic because of the failures of our government to stay at home. You know, a lot of corporations and businesses, small businesses made tons of sacrifices, didn't get the loans they deserved. And all we could do was stay home and be by ourselves and wear our masks. And now, six months into this thing, part of me gets it, even though, my God, double the amount by December, Anna. That's staggering.
Yeah. I feel like this pandemic has really revealed what we already suspected about the right wing specifically, and how their supposed value of human lives when it came to women's right to choose, right? How they wanted to do away with a woman's right to make decisions about her own body because they genuinely believe that a zygote is a living, breathing thing that we need to protect. I mean, it just, for me, just further confirms that it's not about wanting to value and save human lives. It's really about wanting to punish women for the choices that they've made, the choices they'd like to make. Yes. That's one part of it. The other thing is, we are uniquely awful as a country in how we've responded to this. I mean, we account for 4% of the world's population, but because of the high number of deaths in the United States from COVID, we also account for 25% of the number of global COVID deaths. Yeah. I mean, it just gives you a sense of how much we failed. And we're right up there with countries like Brazil, for instance, in terms of our failure. But we're not the same as Brazil, resource-wise. I mean, we are uniquely awful in that we have the resources to do the right thing. And the Trump administration has actively decided to do the opposite of what's in the best interests and in the best, health of the American people. He just doesn't at all care about this at all. And conservatives don't care. They don't care about human lives. All they care about is finding ways to control us, controlling the way we live our lives. And I think they use abortion as an excuse for that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really interesting. There's a lot of senators up for re-election who this November who railed on Obama around Ebola, like, oh, you failed. Two Americans died. Joni Ernst laid into Obama for those two deaths. 190,000 deaths. I think we're there today. Maybe it's 186,000 deaths. This is, and what? I mean, again, this is the death cult of the GOP. And it is a life or death election. I absolutely believe that in so many ways. But it is hard not to, here's what I will say. It's hard not to behave as atrociously as the worst people are behaving in this country, because there is no adult in the room, and it is irresponsible people putting all of the weight to survive this pandemic on responsible people. And yet we don't even get masks. Have you gotten your N95 in the mail? Like, we don't have anything. So like, what are we supposed to do? What are the people who want to be responsible to do? What can they do if they're not an essential worker? Or, you know, if they can have the privilege to stay home versus go out every single day. So it is this free for all Lord of the Flies mentality. And you're absolutely right. It is, as an upcoming Newsbroke piece on Saturday that I am hosting is talking about, it is this pathology of American individualism. It is a cultural problem that we have. It is a belief that somehow all government is bad and that we can't collectively do anything that is killing us, that's truly killing us, that we need to take an honest look at. Like, what does it mean to have a community? What does it mean to have a nation? What does it mean to band together to do something other than kill a foreigner on a foreign land? You know what I mean? Like, just because it's not a war, so what do we do? Like, it's not a terrorist, so what do we do? But can you imagine if it was? Oh my God! You know, like, that is the saddest part, is thinking about if this were a true war, how we would have treated it.
And going back to what you said about Joni Ernst and how she made a big deal about two Americans dying from Ebola, what the Democrats fail at over and over again is while they might pass the right policies in the House, that's not even half of the battle. The majority of the battle is how you engage in political theater. And Republicans have always been better at that. You know, every once in a while, I'll get comments from our audience. They'll be like, no, you don't get it. Democrats are failing on purpose. They are paid by their donors to lose. And you're probably right about that. But one thing that I do know for a fact is that the corporate Democrats want Biden to beat Trump in this upcoming general election. There is no question about that.
Sure.
But they are failing in their messaging because while Trump is like punching them in the face over and over again, they're just like, no, but Joe Biden's super empathetic. No one cares. No one cares. That's not enough of a message. If I were Joe Biden, every single day, I'd be holding a press conference,
yes,
some sort of event where I bring in families or people who have lost their family members, yes, to COVID because of Trump's incompetence. Okay. I would bring in soldiers or family members of fallen soldiers to talk about how, you know, their son or their daughter, whoever they lost in all these needless wars, is not a sucker and a loser. Like, the theatrics, yes, matter. Nancy, mm-hmm, Pelosi, she's like, oh, well, when it comes to the stimulus, the House, we passed a stimulus bill. Now the ball is in the Senate's court. Are you kidding me right now? Really? The Senate is going to vote on their version of stimulus, a so-called skinny stimulus, this week. Okay? It'll do nothing for the American people. But you know what they're planning on doing? GOP in the Senate's going to pass it. And then when the House refuses to pass it, every day they're going to point fingers at Pelosi and Democrats. Why don't you want to help the American people? Why won't you pass this bill? Why are you letting Americans, remain in this desperate economic situation? They know how to play politics.
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi's like, whatever, man, I'm 80. I got my two $12,000 refrigerators. I'm living the high life. I don't care. That's what Nancy Pelosi signals to the American people on a daily basis. She is not our friend. People like her in Congress are not our friends. They're not going to fight for us. They're not going to fight Trump. They're not the resistance. They're 100% the assistance. Mm. And so the question really, in my opinion, goes to the left. How are, yeah, we going to fight back?
Yeah.
Right? Because if we're going to sit back and wait for Democrats like Nancy Pelosi to do the right thing and serve as an opposition party to Donald Trump, I mean, we've already seen how that's played out in 3.5 years.
You're absolutely garbage. Right. I think this is such a good case to be made that progressives need to reclaim this party, that we need to build outside of this party. And we need to understand that they are not, as much as they claim the resistance, they're the assistance. You're absolutely right. Because, I mean, I look at Black Lives Matter and, you know, the Movement for Black Lives, which is an awesome organization, you know, and as in the same breath, they're like, defund the police and Trump must resign, you know, and this is, you know, arguably a fairly left group. Not even as if it's radical to redirect funds from police departments into, you know, health and human services or whatever. But like, they can say both things at once, you know, that this is part of our strategy. We are the actual resistance. The streets are the real resistance to this fascism, to the white supremacy that we're seeing, to the extremism that we're seeing. And exactly right. We're not holding press conferences for him the day after he gets impeached. And I think it's the Democrats. I mean, it's worse than what you're saying, because I feel like they are complicit in ignoring the death. They're complicit in moving on from this story that should be the story every single day, is how do we keep people safe? I think about nurses and doctors have to go to work every day. They're so tired. They are so, like, imagine getting up every morning and going back to the same, you know, losing battle, right? And knowing that your government after 6 months is doing nothing to help you, and that the Democrats aren't actually lifting you up. Yeah, exactly. They we couldn't get something legislation passed. It doesn't matter. You're totally right. Just keep talking. Don't ever stop talking about it. Don't ever stop holding press conferences about it. That is how I think you win in November. And that's definitely how we can change this narrative of everyone for themselves, Hunger Games style, to, hey, let's do something for our like collective good here. Let's wear our masks. Let's continue to not, you know, gather in social situations, have those gender reveal parties that end in wildfires. I just want to say, like, I think a lot of people have been affected and they will continue to be. Please, it would be, I would not be doing my job if I didn't say to please continue to exercise incredible caution, to not gather with your friends and family. I'm telling my mom, look, Thanksgiving, Christmas, I'm sorry, I might not be able to see you, you know? Obviously get tested, but let's treat this with the respect and the gravity that our politicians are not treating it with. Record heat in California and all along the West Coast, and a wildfire season in full swing. Fires are raging in the Pacific Northwest, Colorado, and California mean that there's a tinderbox all around us, and it's been particularly difficult, and even more so when one decides to have a bonkers gender reveal party that involves pyrotechnics. This is what happened over this long weekend. The El Dorado fire burning near Oak Glen in San Bernardino County in California was caused by smoke generated from a pyrotechnic device used during a gender reveal party. As of Monday night, the barely contained fire had grown into a monster that has already burned through nearly 10,000 acres and forced more than 20,000 people to evacuate. Wow. I'm trying to remember exactly how this one went down and how it was actually even started. But apparently, Anna, this is not the first time that gender reveal parties have ended in forest fires. I just want to read this and then get your thoughts. A similar antic in 2017 started a 47,000 acre wildfire in the foothills of southern Arizona's Santa Rita Mountains last year. Another gender reveal gimmick set off a brush fire in Florida. Gender reveal parties have also caused a plane crash. Last year, one grandmother was killed when she was struck by shrapnel after a family unintentionally created a pipe bomb while attempting a colorful explosion to announce the sex of their unborn child. Thoughts?
Okay. I respect people's decision to have children. I don't have children. I hope people respect my decision not to do it. I tell you that to give you like my, you know, biases and I don't want you to think that my bias against having kids is playing any role in what I'm about to say. I think gender reveal parties are stupid. I think they're narcissistic. And look, I'm saying this as someone who has like every single one of my my in-laws, like my husband's siblings and my sibling, every single one of them has had gender reveal parties. And I just don't get it. I don't like, and especially like, it's so narcissistic that in the cases that you outlined, Francesca, they don't even think about how it could start fires or how it could maybe hurt someone physically. Like when you're planning this, I get it. If some people are insistent, like I want to throw a party just to find out what the gender of my baby is. Okay, great. Do it. But just like think a little ahead. Just think about like, hey, maybe this idea of using fireworks is not a good idea. Hey, maybe doing something near dry brush where we're dealing with, you know, wildfires that have only been amplified and, you know, exacerbated by climate change. Maybe we should consider those things. But no, it's just like, oh, I'm going to have a baby. So I want everyone in the world to know it. And every single part of this process needs to be turned into a giant event where I solicit gifts and monetary stuff from
exactly
my friends
what
and family.
It is just like, I need a gift certificate to the Baby Gap. This is not just, I'm going to have a baby shower. That's not enough for my gifts. I need a gender reveal party in addition to that. Look, I get it. Like, you know, I have strong respect for moochers. That's fine. But like balloons, whatever happened to like balloons? Hey, you can let them go into the sky and like, you know, kill a couple sea turtles or whatever. Like whatever happened to that? Why are we resorting to fireworks? This is not... this is not a new pope, people.
Yeah.
It's your probably very mediocre child being born. And like, I think So apparently this became a thing 10 years ago that gender reveal was a thing. I had never heard of it. I don't really have a lot of friends with kids. I didn't know that it was such a big deal knowing what the gender was like. And at a moment when I think in a very healthy way, we are analyzing the gender binary, how it reinforces lots of stereotypes and toxic behavior, also how people are fluid and do not fit into one of the gender binaries. Gender reveal parties just feel like the straightest, most like bizarrely like anti-gay, anti-queer, like demonstration. And also, mm-hmm. you know, when you see all the like, it's a boy, it's a girl, like all the plates and napkins, imagine if you took all that like tchotchke crap and were like, you know what we need? We need more of this. We like mm-hmm. these plates that are pink,
yeah.
these
yeah.
balloons that are blue. This is not enough. I need more of this like baby color, bad gender binary stuff. Like, what? Yeah.
I guess like for me, and let me give you a little inside baseball on how Armenians do it, because you're right, gender reveal parties are relatively new. But Armenians also have a welcome baby shower. Mm. So there's now the gender reveal party where you got to take a gift. Then there's the baby shower pre-birth where you got to take a gift. And then the baby's born and you got to go to a welcome baby party where you got to give a gift, right? Like it's too much.
Maybe does the baby have it's like, then the baby's going to have. Like, what's next? The baby will have, baby maids, you know? Like, they'll be baby maids, like, other babies in the family will dress them up as the same. Then the baby maids will have to give the baby a gift. Then the baby will have to give the baby maids a gift. You know we're headed there.
Oh, for sure. And I love any excuse to, like, get together with people and have a good time. But this goes, all these little events, it goes above and beyond. And I get that having a kid is expensive. I get that you want your community to come together. But there's this like pressure and like this force to it, right? And yeah. I'm a bad person for even saying all this. Like I'm supposed to pretend like I've enjoyed every single one of these events. I don't think any of them are narcissistic. I think they're actually wonderful and selfless. Selfless. That's what gender reveal parties are. And I also want to say that everybody cares what the gender of your baby is going to be. Everybody. Invite more people to this party. Definitely. No, so that's that side. But like, yeah, let's just be a little more responsible if we choose to have these types of events, whether it's a gender reveal party or a regular birthday party or the 4th of July. Just be smart and think about the maybe unintended consequences of how you want to carry this party out.
Absolutely. 20,000 people don't need to evacuate. And if they do, you should have to get them a gift. If your gender reveal party caused someone to evacuate or lose their home, at least an Amazon gift card as
minimum.
I'm mea culpa, if not more, or maybe we just do away with these altogether. The memes on this are endless. Very, very funny. I would encourage everyone to check them out. I also am childless, but I wanted to read a super chat from Carolyn Roberts who says, or Caroline, I'm a mother who adores her kids. Dear God, no one else cares about your kids. Stop.
It doesn't even go that far. Like I love my nieces and nephews more than anyone. Like I'm obsessed with them. They make my life a million times better. I just think like the theatrics, I can't stand the theatrics and all of the like, what's important to you is not necessarily important to everyone around you, right? So finding what the gender of your baby is, I think people would be shocked to find out. Like most people don't care. They're going to love your child no matter what, right? Like I'm going to love my nieces and nephews no matter what. I don't care what their gender is. I don't care what their sexual orientation is. So like the thought of having a party to make a big deal about the gender, or it's not even the gender. It's not even the right terminology. It should be called like the sex reveal party, because you're talking about the biological sex based on, you know,
sure,
the ultrasound, yeah. It's not the gender. Gender is different from sex. But anyway, we're getting into the weeds here. You get what I'm saying.
No, exactly. And if you called it the sex reveal party, maybe people would have a different approach. They would be like, let's skip the sex reveal party. That feels a little weird for our baby to have a sex reveal party. Yeah, you're right. We need to. I will say this though, Anna. Does your dog have an Instagram?
No, I haven't gotten that far yet.
I just started one for my cat, and I get nobody cares, and I know she doesn't have a lot of followers, but I did want a place to share my love. And you don't have to follow it. You can follow it, Tuxedo Chitty, at Tuxedo Chitty. But, like, you get your love for your animal. Imagine if you had a kid. It would be tenfold. You'd probably start an Instagram for it, and you'd obviously ruin them with social media from jump. But it's difficult. It's hard. It's hard when things are cute and squishy and, like, have
totally
sweet faces.
No, I'm in favor of the Instagram pages. I don't mind that. It's just like the, hey, I'm going to inconvenience everyone in my life to come to an event that they have to prepare for, that they honestly have to, like, pay for. It's more that. Like, and also, like, it's, I think the underlying issue is just, I guess it's like the capitalistic nature of things, right?
Yeah.
How everything turns into an event and the underlying thing is money, right?
It's the Hallmark lobby, baby. It is so transactional. Yeah. It's so sad. And I think now with COVID and everything and us being home, we're stripped down to kind of the basics. Like, why are you having a gender reveal party right now? Like, this is not a necessity. This is not a basic. I'm feeling very like, who are the people I love? Who are the people I want to be close to? Let's get them on the phone.
Yeah.
Call your parents. Call your brother. You know, do those things. You don't need to bring a gift. You don't need a big party. Hell, I mean, if you want to get married right now, you don't even need 100 people at your ceremony. You don't even need 10. You know what I mean? Like, what are the basics?
Yep.
Maybe we should be a little bit less consumeristic and materialistic in this time when millions of people are unemployed, losing their homes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, we've decided. I'm glad we're on consensus with this. Candace Owens came for Cardi B. That's right. In an interview with Ben Shapiro, right-wing race-baiting grifter Candace Owens, I really don't know what her formal title is, called rapper Cardi B illiterate, and said that she was stupid. I want to just play a clip of that right now.
Say Kanye West, he's never really written about, like, go out, grab a gat, and just kill people. But unfortunately today, that's the majority of what rap has become, right? And so I completely agree with your assessment about Cardi B. It is one of the biggest insults. If Black Americans are not insulted by the fact that Joe Biden, who has been hiding in his basement, for the entire year, made an appearance and came out because he was going to do an interview with Cardi B. Do we have nothing better to offer? I mean, this would be akin to Donald Trump saying, I'm going to give no interviews, but he came up and he decided to give an interview to Justin Bieber. Right. I mean, Justin Bieber, I'm sorry. I know you are a Christian man. I don't even want to put you in the same boat as Cardi B. But it would be absurd. Right. White America would go, what is this? Why are you being interviewed by Justin Bieber? And it's because you're pandering. Right. You're pandering. You look at Cardi B's Instagram. You see she has millions of followers and you think, OK, this is an illiterate person. And if I appeal to this illiterate person and she does, like she literally did in the middle of this interview, and they think she's cool, she's hip, just by sitting here and taking this interview, Black people will vote for me. It's basically saying, Black people, you are stupid, you are dumb, and you're so foolish. I mean, do you think, what if she just said in the middle of the interview, Joe Biden, can you name one Cardi B album?
Candace Owens talking to Ben Shapiro about what got her goat, which was that Cardi B, a world-famous rapper, would use her platform to interview Joe Biden. Not the other way around. All right, we can get into it, but just so many things wrong with that video. I just want to say it also ends with Ben Shapiro claiming that his version of WAP, right, is better than Cardi B's. And he says, quote, my version slaps harder.
Oh my God.
Like, so many things wrong with this.
That's right, Fran. My version slaps harder. I slap so hard. I have the hardest slapping version. That's what I believe.
Like I slapped my wife. What? He's oh god.
Everything about him. But I do appreciate that Candace Owens, in her own way, is celebrating the mentorship of Ben Shapiro, because much like Ben Shapiro, she doesn't make any sense when she's talking, but she speaks quickly and confidently to trick people into thinking that she's smart or knows what she's talking about. I mean, I can't even count the number of times she embarrassed herself either in congressional hearings by demonstrating how little she knows about history, or even in cable news interviews.
Yes.
Again, demonstrating how little she knows about the world around her. And look, regardless of what you think about Cardi B's lyrics, maybe you don't like that kind of stuff, what it doesn't matter. What does matter though is honesty and authenticity. And on one hand, you have Candace Owens, who's maybe the top grifter and will literally say and do anything for a paycheck as long as it clears. On the other hand, you have Cardi B, who has succeeded, is incredibly wealthy by being herself and by being authentic.
Yep.
And so say what you will about Cardi B, you can't ever argue that she's a grifter. You can't ever argue that she lies about who she is. But Candace Owens ran a blog that made fun of Donald Trump's junk size in 2016 before she decided to like flip the script and pretend like she's some conservative who's disgusted with rap music.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not buying.
That's exactly right. I think that is the most right analysis ever. I am a huge Cardi B fan. I am incredibly offended by Candace calling her illiterate and kind of policing her politics. And Candace Owens has been very much trying to pull Cardi B to the Kanye West side for a long time and gaslight her as a Republican, a Black woman in the public sphere, to basically gaslighting her into saying, you're not a free thinker. When you're a Republican is when you're a quote free thinker. Now it worked on Kanye West, who also is bipolar and has mental illness issues and clearly struggles. So maybe a little bit of low hanging fruit there. But also to claim that like Kanye West doesn't rap about killing people and like his raps are good and Cardi B's are not. No, man, look at anything Kanye's written. It's full of like sexist, disgusting, offensive things. Now you have Cardi B, who's doing what Black female rappers have done since rap was, started, which is claiming their sexuality, reclaiming their sexuality, doing it in an incredible way, and also as a testament to her platform and how big she is, of course she can talk to Joe Biden. Why wouldn't she talk to Joe Biden? She's not in politics. Candace is apparently mad that she's on her turf. She said as much. She said that Cardi B is on her turf now. No, she's not. She's way above you, far, far above, soaring, looking down at you. Oh, look, there's the little grift. Like, that's all it is. Yep. These are apples and oranges, baby. Like, when he goes on her platform, Joe Biden doesn't use her. She's gracing him with a moment to be like, I want to hear you out, whatever, and I want people to vote. Anyway, back to my, million-dollar career. I want to say that Cardi B did respond in a series of videos and tweets, and I think in a different way did not own Candace and did not sort of go after her or attack her, but very much was kind of real with her. She says, why wouldn't Joe Biden sit down with me? I have millions of followers. I pay millions of taxes. I have the number one song in this country. And she also says, this is in an Instagram video, we don't have it, I don't think we have it, but basically she said that, look, that even though she's a, mega star, she has gotten death threats. She gets threatened by Trump supporters all the time. Some kid apparently threatened to burn down her house. She had to call the cops, and cops showed up to this kid's door. She says that her sister, who is gay, has been harassed on the beach, and she posted a video of her sister being harassed by a Trump supporter in the Hamptons. So this was a different tone that Cardi took, which was, I know I shouldn't be stooping to your level, but after this many threats, after this much disrespect, I'm going to address it. Mm-hmm. Right. And she didn't have to, you know, I mean, I think that's Anna, what I think you, I know, experience a lot of times, which is like, why feed the trolls? Why address people who are so beneath you? But it adds up, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not that it adds up. It's just that after a while, and let me just also note for all the people online who respond to a person feeding the trolls with don't feed the trolls, like that makes me want to find those people and go after them, because you don't know what it's like, right? And so when your life gets threatened, or when your family members start getting harassed, and when you deal with these people day in, day out, and you decide, you know what, I'm not going to be quiet anymore, I'm going to say something, just let people speak their piece, right? And so I have no problem with Cardi B responding. I do want to respond to Candace Owens and answer the question she had about Joe Biden refusing to give her an interview. No one takes you seriously, Candace Owens. No one. Okay? The pathetic little troll that you're sitting across in that room, Ben Shapiro, doesn't care about you. You are a useful tool for conservatives. You know that. That is your grift. That is how you make your money. So stop pretending like you're a serious person that a political figure should or would take you seriously. Yeah. The reason why Joe Biden isn't going to sit down and have an interview with her is because Joe Biden isn't going to use her as a tool, right? Candace Owens is going to be used as a tool by the right. And that's why she gets the interviews with Donald Trump. Right. And she knows all this. She knows all this.
Right.
And I don't know. Hopefully she has an easy time sleeping at night. I know I couldn't do it if I was just simply used as a useful idiot for the most reprehensible people in this country.
I think what's really got me about this story is that Candace tries to essentially call Cardi the grifter and say that you are also being used. And it's the typical Please. Sort of the gaslighting that Trump people do in this world we're in, which is, I'm going to tell you exactly who I am. Like, I'm going to accuse you of the thing that I am doing. So she's basically saying, you know, and there's not a tinge. There's nothing but racism in Candace's accusations. Racism, classism, right? She's saying that she's illiterate. She's saying that she was used by a white man, right? As if a black woman can't have her own autonomy and her own thoughts, right? And once again, saying that you're used, apples and oranges, honey. Like, there's no using here, right? Like, Joe Biden was lucky to get that interview, honestly, because we know Cardi B supported Bernie yep. in the primary. She didn't have to talk to Biden. But I'm just going to be real. Looking at Cardi B's Instagram videos, I feel like there's better political analysis and strategy than from most people in this country, where she's like, look, yep. we've got to get Donald Trump out. Biden wasn't my first choice, but I think people need to vote. That's it. That's it.
Yep.
Bless her
yep.
for doing this. And of course, Anna, what do you think Candace has to announce beyond a baby who I'm sure will have a gender reveal party that will burn down an entire city? She's got a book.
Okay, great. Yeah.
There's a book coming out. Of course there is. So at the end of one of these, I realize I'm just relating to you guys this video, like a he said, she said, because that's how we do it on Francesca Fiorentini's Damage Report, okay? It's just me being like, then I saw this, and then I saw that. And like, it's just this how it is. But Candace did hold up her book at the end of an Instagram Live, which is so perfect.
Good for her. I mean, if she can scam right wingers, which she has been doing, then more power to you, right? I just don't care. Like, I don't care at all. But one other thing, just going back to her comments about Cardi B allegedly mm-hmm. being illiterate, which mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. There's, of course, this underlying racial component to it. But remember, Candace Owens supports literally the most illiterate president we have ever had in this country. Okay? A man who can't go a single day without tweeting something embarrassing, grammatically incorrect, misspellings. I mean, really? You're going to come at a singer,
yeah,
an artist, and accuse her of being illiterate when you're simultaneously supporting Covfefe? Okay. All right. Do you? I mean, whatever. No one should take her seriously. And the thing is, no one does take her seriously.
No one
she
does.
Knows it. Yeah, no, so she is projecting. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm so glad we got to this, though. I know half of these things feel like non-stories, and it's like, why are we talking about it? But it's important to name what's going on, and it's important to put down, again, the word soup, the word salad of Candace Owens, just sort of a very, very fancy way to be racist, a very fancy way to say, I get ahead by throwing the entire African-American community under the bus. That's how I've done it. And I think we need to constantly call that out, especially because we're going to be seeing her books at an airport near you if we ever fly anywhere again. But, you know, it's like the very, I swear, Anna, I was at a Hudson News and I saw Janine Pirro's book and Tommy Lahren's book. And I'm still to this day mad that I didn't spill my coffee all over them. Like, I was like, what is wrong with me? I'm the enemy that I didn't just like, you know, just take them, spill coffee, do something, and then bounce. And, you know, the women working in the Hudson News, you think they're going to be like, no, no, don't hurt, you know, Nazi Barbie's, like, memoir. Yeah. No, they don't care.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.